Welcome. This is the September 17th, 2021 ADK Homeroom in-depth look at a single issue, a deep dive, a close-up, if you will. If you didn't hear on the news roundup for today, I am dealing with some allergies, some sniffles. When you go into the podcasting business, these are the things that, at least in my case, you didn't anticipate. How am I supposed to deal with allergies causing me a little sniffles here? I don't know. Figure it out. The dog and the cat, you probably heard far less random meows and dog crashing, chasing the cat through the studio here. Now I have to figure out what to do about these sniffles. You know what, though? It's worth it to live up here in the ADKs. Just absolutely beautiful and gorgeous place to live. I highly recommend it if you have the chance. So let's get into it here. Let's look at our in-depth issue for today. It's by demand, by request. Happy to hear these requests. If you have any more, hit me up at Twitter, the ADK Homeroom, or let me know through the comments and the reviews. Happy to cover what is interesting to people. So my district was open in person all 5 days of the week last year. Every day that we were supposed to be, there were a couple days, I guess, here and there where we closed due to the public health concerns, just to be on the safe side. But basically, we were open every single day except for a scattered day here and there. I think less than, 5 days all year. So how did we do it? Number one rule is you have to have a superintendent who believes in staying open. If you're a public school district, you have to have a superintendent who is willing to fight for it to stay open. A lot of people don't realize the power of the superintendent in New York State schools. It is close to unstoppable. He's pretty much a dictator. For example, he can hire whomever he wants. Sure, there are certification rules, but for teachers, there are certification rules, but there are loopholes, and the superintendent can issue provisional things. He can say, well, I couldn't find anybody else, so because of this emergency measure or that emergency measure, I'm going to hire this person. And yes, the superintendent is answerable to the Board of Education, of course, but a lot of boards of education just defer to the superintendent in almost every decision because the superintendent knows a heck of a lot more about education and running the school than the people who have very kindly volunteered to be on the Board of Education. You can also see it in the power of the superintendent to close school for normal reasons, like a snow day, right? It's up to the superintendent. Yes, no. Superintendent has a lot of power, so it really starts with the superintendent's decision. Now, I'm trying to get our superintendent on here for an interview. I reached out to him, and we will see if he will come on here, our superintendent last year, because the district did end up changing superintendents. One wonders if the stress from last year had an impact on our former superintendent, who did such an amazing job last year, if the stress and the pressure had such an effect on him that he decided, no, that's it, I'm getting out of here. Hopefully he will come on the show and answer those questions. So once you have that superintendent in place, then of course you have to do a good job of staying open, and that relies on the teachers, that relies on the kids, and of course it relies a little bit on the pandemic itself. So we'll get into all these things now. Let's look at them. First, let's start with the superintendent side of things. What kind of a superintendent do you want to have if your district is looking to hire somebody and you're anticipating more issues like this and you want your school to stay open as much as possible for that precious, important in-person learning? What do you look for in your superintendent? Well, in our case, it starts with philosophy. Our superintendent had a firm, strong philosophy that the schools must stay open. He hardly ever called snow days. We live up here in the Adirondack Mountains, and there would be days when it's 20 degrees below zero, and there is a bunch of new snow coming down, feet of snow already on the ground, wind blowing across there, and we're trudging into school. I'm not making that up for you people down there in Philadelphia that closed school with an inch and a half of snow. We are going to school. Of course, we're better equipped to deal with it. We have the plows. We have the four-wheel drives. But there were some days where people were not happy that our school superintendent believed so strongly in keeping school open. But he did. And this philosophy paid off tremendously for us last year. So why did his philosophy say that the schools must stay open, you know, come snow or pandemic? Why is it so important to him to keep the schools open? The first reason, of course, is sure to educate the kids. The second reason, though, and the last reason is it's just as important, I think, as the first in our superintendent's mind, our former superintendent. We could ask him, hopefully, if he comes on the show, is socioeconomic. He believes strongly that families needed school as daycare, because if the kids couldn't be in school, then the parents couldn't go to work. At least one parent would have to stay home. And then the parents are trapped in this situation where they can't work, they can't better themselves, they can't dig themselves out of poverty. So they need the school to be there. The school and the family need to work together. The school needs to bridge the opportunity gap, as our former superintendent would like to say. The school needs to be there so the parents can work, and so that the school can provide food for families also that might need that assistance, and a safe haven for kids who might be being abused at home. For all these socioeconomic reasons, our superintendent believed that the schools must stay open. And he believed that very, very strongly. One example we did on a professional service day, one day, or in-service day, we did a poverty simulation. I didn't actually like this activity too much. I thought it was, in fact, a little bit insulting to people who are actually in poverty. But what happened was we got everyone together in the gym, and then you had a little index card that said what your role in this poor community was. Like, one guy was in charge of the pawn shop, and one guy was in charge of the weekly check cashing place. And then other people were running a family of three. Other people were single mothers with an infant and a school-aged child. And then you had to accomplish these very tests. I thought it was a little bit insulting. And also, I thought it was a very poor economic model, because it was a zero-sum game. You couldn't better yourself. You couldn't choose to work more. You couldn't negotiate. You couldn't actually do a job that would generate more wealth and improve your station. So I thought it was bad. But we did that, and we spent a whole day on that, because our administration was so fully believing in the impact of poverty on our district, which the impact of poverty on our district is huge. That's true. And the administration was doing everything they could to alleviate that impact and to help these kids out. And our superintendent really believed that the schools had to stay open to help those impoverished families. Now, that's not all, though. Your superintendent, so that's the first thing. He has to have that philosophy. But we've got four other qualities that he has to have, too. Besides that philosophy, the second thing is he has to be brave enough to carry out that philosophy. This is not a place for cowards, right? Yates, I already quoted, but Yates, he also said that's no country for old men, right? Well, this was no country for cowards. I talked with our superintendent last year. He said, and he was right, we took a lot of risks last year. You cannot be risk averse if you want your school to stay open. So that's the second quality. Could have been sued, could have been in big legal trouble with the state, threatening state aid, all these different things. So that's the second quality. You have to have that philosophy in your superintendent. The second quality is you have to be brave enough to stick to that philosophy. The next quality he has to have, we've got three more here. The next quality he has to have is you got to have the political skill to pull it off. Our superintendent was constantly talking to the Department of Health, constantly talking to parents, constantly talking, because at least one of the principals in our school really did not want us to be open, wanted us to shut down, and he had to manage that. So you have to have political skill too. Next quality, you got to be a hard worker. this would not have been possible, even if he had that philosophy, even if he were brave, even if he had the political skill. If he didn't put in the hard work like anything else, then it wouldn't have happened, right? Got to put the nose to the grindstone, right? Nose to the grindstone. You do that long enough, eventually the nose starts winning and the grindstone starts losing. Our superintendent, he was up every day, constantly working the phones. He let other stuff go on the back burner, right? He focused on his work on what was the most important thing, and he got it done. Perhaps not a coincidence then that he retired, but there are some other factors too. We'll have to ask him. And the last thing that certainly helps, but maybe wasn't quite necessary, is that we are a small town. People in a small town, I'm just going to say it, they tend to be nicer, they tend to be kinder. I've lived in small towns, I've lived in big cities, I have never seen worse racism, attitude, elitism than I saw in New York City. Certainly, the bigger the town gets, I have seen the worse people's manners get. Manners are at a premium in a small town. You see each other, and as Heinlein said, manners are the lubrication in human interaction. Very important. Everybody knows everybody here, and you've got that tribal thing going on, those coalitional instincts that John Tooby talked about. Go read his essay on edge.org. Very important to understand coalitional tribal instincts. So because people know each other here, we're all in the in group. We're all us. We're not thems to each other. We're all us to each other. And the great us versus them evolutionary psychology battle that lives in all our lizard brains. So we've got that working for us. I don't know that that's necessary, but it's absolutely true that people in a small town, we got each other's backs and we know each other. It makes a difference if you know each other. So that's all on the superintendent side of things. You have to have that if you want to stay open during a pandemic like we had last year. Next piece that you have to have, well, I'm going to get to the faculty and what we did and the procedures that we did. But the next thing really is you have to have a pandemic that isn't that bad. Oh, I can hear the screams already. I can hear everybody saying, oh, of course this pandemic is horrible. Oh, it's terrible. Now, look, I'm not one of these guys out here about to take dewormer. I'm fully vaxxed. I recommend that all adults get fully vaccinated. But look, this pandemic, it isn't as bad as many others. Smallpox, IFR, infection fatality rate, 30%. For our little pandemic here, we're talking 0.3% maybe, 0.4% maybe, 100 times less. And people lived with smallpox, they went about their lives. They did not shut down for years at a time. They couldn't have because smallpox raged across the human population for centuries. And it was 100 times worse, 100 times worse in terms of infected fatality rate. And of course, the IFR for COVID is 0.2% if you're not in an institution in the United States. And for kids, this pandemic isn't bad at all. It's less dangerous than the flu. In 18 months of this pandemic, you've got fewer than 400 kids dying either of or with COVID. Rachel Walensky started to make that difference, so I can make that difference, that distinction also. Meanwhile, in just the single season of a few months of 2019 flu deaths, it was almost 450. So that's more flu deaths in just a single months-long season in 2019 than the entire year and a half COVID pandemic. This pandemic is really not that bad for kids. So that's the next piece that you need to know, is that the way to stay open is that you have a pandemic that actually is not nearly as bad a threat as many people make it out to be. So, you got all that. Now, in school, what did we do in school to stay open? Well, we had kids and teachers who were responsible. Our teachers were, you know, understanding of this, and they didn't walk out on the very first day. They did. We had a neighboring school district here that all the union teachers did stand up right in the middle of the first faculty meeting, first faculty and staff meeting, I should say. It wasn't just the faculty there, And they just walked right out in protest. And then that school was closed for most of the year. It was only remote for most of the year. In fact, they're kind of back at it again. I haven't looked this up, but I heard someone told me yesterday they already have quarantined 70 of their kids. They are just kicking kids out of their school left and right. So we didn't do that. We were very responsible. Now, we weren't as responsible as we could have been. Well, I should say we weren't as understanding as we could have been because our union did object to some of the rules. Our superintendent was going to let our students and teachers take off their masks in the classrooms last year. We were only going to mask in the hallways. But then the day before school started, the union screamed about that, and that got changed. That was very upsetting to me personally because I have both moral and mental health objections to masks. But like the rest of the teachers, I didn't walk out last year. I stuck with it. I went through the whole year. The superintendent apologized to me on several occasions for the way that that happened. But I was very understanding, just like the rest of the teachers. You have to have that cooperation. And this goes back to the political skill of the superintendent. And it's a credit also to the teachers that they were willing to do this. So that's one piece, is that you have to have that understanding. And then in terms of mechanically, what did we do? We had air purifiers in the room. I don't think those things work at all. But we also had great air circulation. We had the windows open all the time. A lot of the classrooms that I went into had their windows open. And our school is perched on the side of a hill. My classroom is on the top floor. So when I open the windows, that air zooms in and out of there. It's kind of like being in a wind tunnel up there. So that air circulation really, really helped. We also just talked to the kids about being responsible. And it turns out that we went through the entire year, and we talked to the kids about this as the year went on, without a single case transmitted in the school. The transmissions, when they happened, were all outside of the school. So we pointed that out to the kids. We were very transparent. We said, you know, look, the transmission isn't happening in the school. It's happening outside of the school. So please be very careful about what you're doing outside of the school. Athletic teams, macking, things like this, you have to use your judgment and try to be a little bit better in your judgment than the epidemiologist, the professional professor epidemiologist whose predictions were going wrong left and right all last year. And then, of course, we did have staggered class releases. We didn't have people in the hallways as much as we did for other years. I think that may have helped somewhat. And that's really it. We didn't do a whole lot other than that. We had a lot of air circulation. We did have these giant white air purifier. They called them Medify machines. But I don't think those things did much. And we had the kids showing up and being responsible outside of school because that's where the transmission was taking place. So, And we had teachers that were willing to teach and teachers being brave to come in. And that's really all it took. There wasn't much more than that. The air circulation. We did have the kids in masks, but by the end of the year, that rule had gone, by the wayside too. So I don't think that the masks helped too much. The social distancing, that had gone by the wayside within a month of the school opening. That definitely did not help at all. There was not meaningful social distancing in our school district after, I would say, October. And that's probably, an indictment of all these ridiculous measures that we're going to. Because if we were able to stay open all last year without meaningful social distancing, and in the spring, a lot of the masking really stopped too. You don't need the masks. You don't need the social distancing to keep your school open and do a great job. You need the teachers who aren't going to walk out. I think the air circulation does help a lot, and the ventilation, I think that helped a lot. And you needed the kids to be responsible outside of school where the transmission was happening. And they were. You know, the kids are great these days. If you haven't been in a high school since 1990s or 1980s or something, high schools are such a different place now. The kids are very different. And yeah, they were pretty responsible about it. Bullying, you know, it still does happen. Mean girls are out there, but not as bad. And the bullying's not as bad either. Schools are a kinder, gentler place. Qualitatively, I would say the median bullying incident has moved from something like fistfights and stealing money to calling names online, right? It's become a very feminized place, like a lot of American culture, right? A great feminization has taken place in American culture over the last 30 years, but that may be a topic for another day. So let's kind of wrap up here. What did we do to stay open last year? Well, first, we had a superintendent. This was absolutely essential, who believed in the school staying open. He had all the skills to make it work. He was brave enough to make it work. He had the political skill to make it work. He had the work ethic to keep working at it, to stay after it every single day. And then we had the small town atmosphere going for us. It's not necessary and it's definitely not sufficient, but I think being in a small town does help because people feel a greater sense of camaraderie in a small town. Next, we had the pandemic that really wasn't that bad, right? I have to believe for my own sanity that in their heart of hearts, people do realize that the flu is more dangerous for kids than COVID. And if you're talking about the population in the whole, the pandemic is worse than the flu for older people, but it's way less virulent than smallpox or some other diseases that we've had in the past. So that helped. And then finally, we had in school day to day these processes. We did not rely on social distancing. As I said, that went out the window in October. We did have the masks on for the year in name, and then by the spring though, the masks had really been people were still wearing them, don't get me wrong, but they were under the noses and they were coming off in various places and they weren't being put on as soon as people entered the building and they were dirty and they were not being respected in any way near the way they were at the beginning of the year. So it wasn't the mass either. What it was, the mechanical day-to-day operations, we had good air circulation. We're a very windy school. We're on the side of a hill. It's pretty cool. We had teachers who were brave and didn't walk out and were willing to work with the kids and be there. And then we had kids who were very responsible about what they were doing outside of school. They saw what happened in the spring of 2020. They saw how horrible it is not to have in-person school, not to have an education. And so they really helped make it work. So those are the things that we did to make in-person school happen 5 days a week last year. And hopefully we can get even more insights on this process from our superintendent and share with all the other neighboring districts how we did it. And what was able to happen here could happen over there if they follow suit. And I sure hope they do because this pandemic has taken so much away from kids. You know, proms and school plays and athletic teams and academic competitions and field trips and labs. If you just think in your memory how formative some of those events were. Your high school varsity basketball team, your experience on that team, your soccer team, the chance to, you know, be a lead or a star in the school play, your prom. These are things that inform people's lives. And we've had 2 years now, and we're going on a third of kids who have missed that. Will they be okay? Yeah, they'll be okay, but they would have been better if they had a chance to do that if we hadn't sacrificed their development and their pursuit of happiness for the sake of a chance, a small chance, a questionable chance at saving the lives of people who are much, much older than they are and not them, right? The basic question, is it okay to sacrifice somebody else's happiness and rights and pursuit of their interests for somebody else who's completely unrelated? Is that okay? We seem to have decided it is. I would disagree. Either way, I hope that you have a great weekend, and I will see you back here again on Monday, hopefully with some news of our former superintendent coming in for an interview. I will let you know. Take care.